On April 24th of 2024, the Bozeman Public Library hosted a candidate forum for people running for the open seats on the Bozeman School Board.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Bozeman Public Library. My name is Beth Boyson. I'm an adult services librarian here at the library. Thank you for attending this school board candidate forum session. This forum is for information only and does not endorse or promote any vote for or against candidates on the upcoming ballot. A special thanks to the sponsors of our candidate forum series, the Bozeman League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman Public Library, and Belgrade Community Library Foundation. The candidates we will hear from, seven of them today, are running for the four vacant seats on the Bozeman School Board. The time allotted to hearing from these candidates will run from 6:30 to approximately 8 p.m., maybe 8:15 p.m., and Sally Mason of the League of Women Voters will be moderating. This meeting is being recorded and will be rebroadcast on KGBM 95.9 Gallatin Valley Community Radio. It will be available to listen to as a podcast on their website. Ballots for the election have been mailed out on April 19th and can be returned by mail or in person from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday to the County Election Office in Bozeman. Ballots are due and must be received by 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 7th. Thank you to everyone for being here and for giving the public the opportunity to ask your questions.
Good evening. I'm Sally Mason from the League of Women Voters, and I've got a couple of housekeeping things. The League of Women Voters also has an online voter guide at Vote411, where you can see how the candidates responded to the questions we asked. Go to vote411.org and put in your physical address to view the information from the candidates in your school district. We are providing this service for all of the school districts in Gallatin County, and please let your friends and family members that live in other school districts know about Vote 411. And it will be up as well in the fall. The national organization sets it up. But you'll be able to look up your own legislator when the legislative races run in the fall. So that's one thing. And I was asked to read this. There's a ballot issue on the June 4th primary election ballot. You'll be asked whether or not you would like to review your form of government. The question is required by our Constitution, Montana, to be asked of voters every 10 years, and this is the year. So the arguments before, I don't know who wrote this, but not anybody who was, you were not leaning one way or the other about all this, for the review of the government of Bozeman and Gallatin County, and the establishment and funding not to exceed the number of dollars or mill amounts of a local government study commission consisting of X number of people to examine the government or city or county and submit recommendations on the government. Against the review of the government of Bozeman, Gallatin, and the establishment and funding not to exceed number of dollars of a local government study, blah, blah, blah. It makes no sense. Never mind. Okay. We have asked the candidates. Three of you will be elected from these six, and Sandra Wilson is running uncontested, all for the school board. So you'll be asked to vote for three. That's correct?
Four.
Or four. Yeah, sure. So, okay, here's, we start with, we've asked the candidates to talk for 2 minutes and tell us why they ought to be elected. That's the first thing we're going to do. There are two timers right in the middle, candidates, and they'll tell you when to stop. But you get 2 minutes for this. Who would like to start? Gary, go for it.
Yes, thank you. My name is Gary Lucene, originally from Fort Benton. My wife and I moved from Missoula to Bozeman in 1981, started our private practice in physical therapy, managed that for nearly 40 years, also did practices, started in Belgrade, Butte, and Kalispell, transitioned all those to owners, employees within our organization, but through that learned the importance of culture in an organization. My involvement in the school system had two children go through Bozeman Public Schools, and during that time participated a lot in activities and a lot of things, as a lot of parents do, and became involved in the renovation, building of CJ, the new CJ Middle School, renovation of Bozeman High School, and then all the buildings after that. I was elected to the board in 2005. I've been on the board for 19 years. I've been chair twice. I've been involved in the Montana School Boards Association Board of Directors. I was on that board for 13 years. Just got off that last year. I was 8 years on the Dean of Education, Education, Health, and Human Development at MSU for 8 years. So through that experience, I got to see how education operates in different levels and hearing from different school boards, and have learned that we need some change in our education, our system of education today. It's difficult. That's a process I'm working on now. And it's one of the reasons I'm running again for the school board, is to try and complete that process. And it's going well to this point. But while we have a very good school in our district, schools in our district, we need some changes needed. Thanks.
Who wants to be next?
Okay, Sandy.
Hello, my name is Sandy Wilson, and I'd like to thank you all for coming tonight and the League of Women Voters for putting this on. I have lived in the Valley for 50 years and raised two children. They went through Anderson School, rural school south of town, and came into the high school in Bozeman. My profession was teaching in public schools for 33 years, three of those at Ophir School and 30 at Anderson School. When I retired, I was really struggling with retirement and missed kids and missed working in schools. And so the opportunity arose to be appointed on the school board, and then I am now running unopposed for the fourth term. I bring to the board 9 years of service. I've been on many committees, currently with the Bozeman School Foundation's the voting liaison for the school district. I participated in ongoing board trainings, and many of you might recognize me on Zoom. I was chair during COVID. I'm a strong supporter of public schools. I also believe in collaboration. We are moving into a very different times in schools and in our world. And it's really important to me to bring a bunch of minds and a bunch of ideas together to help solve the problems that we are facing, not only in our schools, but in our community and in our world. I'm a good listener. I really enjoy problem solving, and we have a lot of things in the school district that we're working on right now, and there always will be. And I also don't bring an agenda to the table except for doing what's best for our kids in Bozeman. Thank you. Oh, I did want to add, can I add one more thing on the difference between me and the other trustees?
Sure.
Okay. I represent all the rural schools. Yeah. That surround Bozeman, and so Lamont, Anderson, Gallen, Gateway, Montfortin, and I vote on high school issues only. So that's what makes me different from the rest of the people who are running.
Who wants to be next?
Okay. Hi, thank you for coming here tonight. My name is Liana Bertelson, and I've lived in Bozeman for over 30 years. My spouse and I, we've raised three kids who went through the Bozeman schools, and in fact, our youngest just graduated last year. I'm from Bozeman High. So since 1989, I've been in public education. I'm actually a former eighth grade teacher at CJ. I taught at MSU in the Mathematical Sciences Department, and currently what I do, I'm a math education facilitator. So that means I travel to school districts around the country, and I support teachers in math education. So why do I want to be in the school board? Very simply, I am a passionate supporter, both personally and professionally, in public education. I think that the investment in our kids is the greatest bang for the buck that we can ever make. And so that's a resource I'm deeply committed to, and providing the best education for the students in our community. You would think that all my years being in public education, that being a trustee as I have for the last 3 years, I had a lot to learn, very steep learning curve on what my role is as a trustee. So one thing that I want to highlight is in some of my subcommittee work, I serve as the municipal director on the Montana School Board Association. That means that I partner with trustees from around the state and work on guiding policy at the state level in the legislature. And that's really important work I hope to continue, because all of these pieces are what help to make our community and our schools great. So I hope to continue in that capacity. Thank you for being here.
Okay, go.
Hello, thank you all for being here. My name is Melissa Moran. I am originally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I graduated from Louisiana State University in December of 99. With a degree in elementary education. In January of 2000, I packed up and moved to Montana with a guy. 25 years later, we are still here. I never taught in the classrooms. I was a substitute teacher in Casper, Wyoming for a while. Had a couple of long-term positions in the Casper School District. I was offered a first grade position at a school in Casper. However, my husband and I moved back to Montana and got in the restaurant business. 21 years ago, I believe, and we have 13 restaurants throughout Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, Colorado, and soon to be Nebraska. And I love public education. I feel very fortunate. I have two boys that are an eighth grader and a 10th grader, one at SAC and one at BHS. I do as much as I can to get involved in the schools, especially when they were younger. I'm on the Bozeman Schools Foundation Board. I've been on for 9 years. I served as chair twice. I'm also a cat mentor at Highlight. I have been with my little girl for 3 years. And I love teachers. My favorite week of the year is Teacher Appreciation Week. And I'm just a proponent of public education and feel very fortunate to have two kids go to school here.
Thank you. Who would be next? Yeah, Carly.
Hi, my name is Carly Bryant. Thank you all for coming tonight. I currently go to Bozeman High School. I am a senior there, and I have decided to run for school board because I really believe in student representation in the governing body. I think, especially in Montana, it's really important that stakeholders have representation in whatever governing body that they also participate in, and that's really important in our schools. I've seen the ways in which our school board has successfully navigated COVID as I moved here in the middle of, right when COVID actually happened, I moved here on the 13th from Billings School Districts. And I've seen the immense amount of resources Bozeman Schools have provided me compared to other school districts in Montana. And I'm immensely grateful for that. But I've also seen ways in which we can grow as a community. And within my time in the Bozeman Schools, I've served many roles, from being a student in the school district to being a civic educator in the community, an athlete, and an avid peer. And I understand what it's like to be young in Montana, and specifically Bozeman, Montana right now, and what issues we really need to tackle head on right now, and how it's affecting students and teachers as we keep progressing in this age. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good evening, everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank the Bozeman League of Women Voters for organizing this, the Bozeman Public Library for hosting this event. I'd also like to thank my wife, Marlena, for constantly motivating me to be a better father and person, my children, and I'd like to thank all of you for being here this evening. My name is Josh Sadai, and I'm from Butte, America, Montana. And after leaving Butte, I decided to follow my passion for skiing. That endeavor took me all over the world. I competed on the U.S., North American, and Free Skiing World Tour as a sponsored athlete and was a pre-qualified athlete on the Free Skiing World Tour. I first moved to Bozeman in 2003. I went back to school at MSU, got my bachelor's degree in cell biology and neuroscience, and a business administration minor in 2012. Since then, collectively, my wife and I have started 6 businesses in Bozeman. We've successfully sold 2 of them. And because of that, these small businesses have given me the knowledge that I have now. First and foremost, our children are our future. Schools are the guardians of what we as society hold as our most important asset, our children. As a parent and an active member of this community, I understand the hopes and dreams that we all have for our children, and this is why I'm running for school board. And I will focus on a few things. My top priority as a school board trustee will be to enhance student success, and to do this by getting back to the basics of core curriculum. We also need to foster collaboration by engaging both parents and teachers in this process. In addition, I believe the importance of ensuring fiscal responsibility through the distribution of our district's financial resources, promoting transparency, accountability, and finally, to advocate for policy reform and to do so with parental input and teacher input. In conclusion, if I'm elected, I will apply all of my expertise, and thank you for coming.
Robert?
Yeah, Robert Black.
You're the man.
I'll be the man. I'm Robert Black. I was born in Sheffield, Alabama, before Pearl Harbor, a few months before Mitch McConnell, born in the same hospital, so we're looking at age here. Let me rattle off. As a lawyer and a PhD, I've got to rattle off some stuff here. There's a lot that I have experienced I've had. J.D. is from South Carolina. I'm admitted Montana, Colorado, South Carolina. I'm a member of the Supreme Court of the United States. Ph.D. from Princeton. B.A. and M.A. from Oxford, Pembroke College, Oxford. M.A. from Vanderbilt. B.A. from Sewanee. I was a trustee at my alma mater, the University of the South, in Sewanee, Tennessee. 18 years of teaching, I think. Hard to count them all. English in colleges and constitutional law and torts in law school. This time last year, I was teaching constitutional law in law school. 10 years of postgraduate study, 30 years of running my own business as a lawyer in Charleston, civil rights, personal injury, author of 2 books. I'm Robert Ray Black, Robert Ray Black Online, and co-editor of the prose Psalter, the first book of the Bible ever translated into English. It's before Wycliffe, by the way. I got a direct commission. Whoa. In the infantry, military intelligence, Korea, prosecutor to juveniles, anything from murder, shoplifting, truancy in the family court. I was a substitute teacher at Gallatin High School until I was fired in December of 23. Ranch hand at the Burns Ranch, Big Timber, and I got the first woman in an all-male college at the Citadel about 25 years ago. You might remember that. Part-time employee at REI. Have one stepdaughter, a great politician in the South Carolina legislation. I have 2 sons, one of whom is coming tomorrow. He's a dentist. And I have one in Helsinki. I'm going to Helsinki to see him in June and July, and then over to a reunion in England. I'm going to stop. I have 30 seconds, but I'm going to let it go. Thank you. I've worked with the League of Women Voters before in the Citadel case. Good to see you all here.
Thank you. We asked the candidates to prepare a question. They each have 2 minutes to tell you what they've thought about. And then after that, we'll get to your questions. And the rest of the evening will be about your questions. So the question we asked them to prepare was, what do you see as the biggest issues that should be addressed by the school board? And do you want to choose yourself, or do you want me to just call on you?
Just go down the line. Just start there.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We started with Gary. This time we're going to start with Sandy.
Okay.
And we'll just go around, and I'll pick on the one next to the next one. Wait. Sandy?
There are a lot of issues facing public schools today. And one of them that trickles into a lot of things that we're dealing with right now is funding and adequate funding, especially for our local schools. Currently, the formula that we've been using for a long time that guarantees equal funding for all kids in Montana does not have a mechanism to get inflation funding over 3%. In addition to that, there's no opportunity to get additional funding for us to operate our schools in a high cost of living area. That trickles down to us making it very difficult for us to pay our teachers what we need to pay them. We're currently, I think, 50th or 51st in the state in starting teacher salary, and we need to do something about that. Currently, well, pretty soon we're going to be looking at this formula and asking for some different ways to fund school. So, because right now I feel like it's really not equal for our Bozeman schools. Changes coming, the way we deliver instruction, what we teach, how we teach is coming in. We are having a lot of change happening in our public schools right now. We're moving to block scheduling. We are professional learning communities that are at, we're asking our teachers to come out of their classroom and collaborate with each other and share kids. It's no longer my kids and your kids and your kids, but it's our kids. So there's a lot of new things that are coming down the pike that are really exciting in the age of education, but they come with issues that we're going to have to face. So that's what I think are the most pressing issues.
Leanne?
Right, so Sandy and I did not talk about this ahead of time, but I'm in a similar vein. But what I want to start with is that of all the things about our schools, we have an incredible staff, incredible teachers who do amazing things. And I am concerned about the challenges and stresses that they face. And they need all of our support and every resource we can give them. And so embedded in that is funding. And funding is complex. You know, I've been learning more about it in the position that I've been in. You know, the funding that's needed so that our schools and our communities get what I feel that they deserve in quality. And so the important thing that's happening with the funding formula is that in the 2025 legislature, we have a chance to redefine what is meant about a quality public education. And that is going to lead to a redefinition of what the equalization formula is going to be for all schools in Montana. And so the position that I'm in right now is I serve as a municipal director on the Montana School Boards Association. So I'm a piece of part of those trustees that get to be in those conversations. And this is one of the things that I'm really motivated by to continue the work that I've been doing and work with that body. There's a lot to learn on how that operates. We're not the Montana School Board Association is not the only entity, but we work with a collaboration of other education entities throughout the state. And I feel that's an important voice to bring about what we're facing in Bozeman and have that be a part of the conversation in Helena. And that's we lead in the state. We are a high-functioning board, and we lead in the state for the AA schools in the precedents that we set. So I take that responsibility very seriously, and that trickles down to all the programming and all the things that are necessary to keep our really great teachers and to recruit, you know, talented people to stay and want to live here in Bozeman.
Thank you.
I think one of the biggest issues facing our schools is attracting staff. When I moved here in January of 2000, for every job opening there was over 100 applicants. It's not the case anymore. For every job opening there's probably 10 applications. We have to figure out a way to start with the freshman class, and I don't know if they can take a survey to see who's interested in teaching and figure out how to get them to stay and go to school at Montana State University and stay here and want to teach in a state that we live in. We have to figure out how to attract people to Montana. It's expensive to live here. Retain our teachers and just... I had the honor of awarding 40 worthy student scholarships to high school seniors about 3 weeks ago. And out of the 40 seniors, four of them were all going to school for elementary education, specializing in special ed. However, they are leaving the state of Montana and going to Grand Canyon University. How can we as a district work to keep those four seniors at Montana State University and get them to come back and teach here? I think it's a big issue.
Carly?
One of the biggest issues I see facing my generation particularly is climate change. I've talked with every single one of my peers, my classmates. We're all deeply worried for our futures, especially living in Montana. In Bozeman, many people's houses were burned to the ground in the Bridger fires. I know folks whose houses were flooded in Livingston, and the list goes on. I don't feel as though our schools are protected enough from the climate crisis or any climate disasters. And so one of my platforms within this campaign is to really amplify the fact that our district should be doing more to respond to the climate crisis. It's an issue that our generation has been put the burden on and is going to continue to have to face for the rest of our lives as it only amplifies. And living in Montana, I don't think anyone wants to see our natural beauty go up in flames or sink. We all love the mountains. We love hiking. And with that, it's all about education. I think teaching students about what's going on, especially like an interdisciplinary climate curriculum that includes many different perspectives from folks that are low income and the students of color are especially affected by the climate crisis. These are things that need to be implemented into our schools to adequately address the climate crisis. Yes.
Thank you. Josh?
I think the biggest issues that will need to be addressed with the school board over the next several years include teacher recruitment and retainment, and also accountability and accountability at all levels. Firstly, teacher recruitment and retention are vital for maintaining a high-quality education system. We must offer competitive wages. We've got to have professional development opportunities. We need supportive work environments. And we need to retain these educators who are committed to the success of our children. Currently, the teachers in the district are stretched too thin right now, and I know this because my sister is an elementary teacher within the district. Secondly, I think we need to have accountability at all levels. We need fiscal accountability, we need academic accountability, and there also must be personal accountability, and that includes the trustee members, the administration, and the students themselves. Accountability of the role of school, board, district, trustee, is paramount to ensuring the success and well-being of the students in this district. Fiscal accountability is essential. I'm committed to the prudent financial management, ensuring the taxpayer dollars are used effectively and efficiently. Academic accountability is also crucial. We must regularly evaluate and assess performance and educational outcomes as we need to identify where we need to improve. And lastly, personal accountability is fundamental. And this one I am going to take a little personally. As a trustee, I will be held accountable for the values and principles that guide the educational system within this district. There also needs accountability with all of our admin. But I would also like to share a quick story that happened to my son. He was cyberbullied after school by some middle school. He's 8. And they then posted it on TikTok and then went over and showed him how stupid he was and said, we posted this on TikTok. And so there needs to be accountability as far as students go as well.
Thank you. Robert?
Yeah, thank you. I would endorse what Carly Bryant said as the principal issue facing us. Enfolded in that is that the district needs to understand that we are competing globally, not just within Montana. With Gallatin High School, as I told you, I was a substitute teacher, and for an education in itself, become a substitute teacher. Don't try to teach, you'll get fired. But just be a substitute teacher and see what it's like in the trenches. 30% proficiency in math and 50 in English is not good enough. That's the Gallatin figure. 80% in English, 60% in math at Bozeman High School is not good enough. Bozeman is the best high school in Montana, but we're competing globally. So my emphasis is to improve the quality of education, to understand that education is a principle that is not bureaucratic. All of these issues, by the way, are these financial issues. That's the legislature. We're in a perfect storm. It's hard to be a teacher, hard to be a student. I want to serve with the understanding that everything, I'm an academic and I'm a lawyer, everything I do is going to be perhaps aggressive, but getting to the realization that we're playing for keeps against the rest of the world. It's not our border states, which, by the way, outrank us in education, but it's the whole world. When I'm in Finland, I might go to a school and see what they're doing right. But I have a lot of ideas about what education is. It's challenging, it's thinking for yourself, learning all you can in order to compete. Thank you.
So the new mission of our district, based on the recent long-range strategic plan we did, is Bozeman Public Schools exists to ensure high-level learning for all students. And that's a big ask. But our district is on that path, and I want to see that path continue. So to continue our long-range strategic plan, keep it dynamic and adjusting throughout the year, because that's what guides our district to move in the direction that we need to go. So there's internal issues our board has control over, but there's external issues around the state that we don't have any control over that influences how we are able to provide education to our students, how we can fund our teachers and staff. And it's those, separating those issues and getting all those parties together to discuss education issues and hear from our teachers, administrators, parents, students is critical. The process for years has been kind of a top-down approach, legislature down. And I think people I've talked to around the state, there's interest in maybe changing that dialogue and that discussion and start a grassroots effort to really look at what's happening in our schools today, in our classrooms, because it's changing dramatically. I want to continue good leadership in our district with a well-functioning board and administration. Recruitment and retention, as mentioned, is significant, but that's one of those external things that we really need to address as well. We continue to work hard to maintain our transparency. I think our district has done a good job in communicating with staff and parents and being transparent with our community. We want to continue that and continue to work together. Thank you.
Now, we're going to take questions from you. And I would ask you strongly to not make a speech, but to ask a question. And if you start to make a speech, I'm going to stop you and be icky to you. Sorry about that. But we came to hear the candidates, not the people in the audience. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to the question. You can pass at any time, candidates, or you can say, I agree with him, her, or you can have a minute to respond to it as well. And you can put your question to a particular person if you like, but everybody gets a crack at all the questions. Okay? Everybody got the rules? No speeches, folks. Yes, and you'll be next.
I'd like you all to talk about book banning, especially in regards to science and sex ed.
Okay, book banning. Did everybody hear the question?
No.
She wants to know what the candidates think about book banning and sex education.
In regard to sex ed and science.
In regard to sex ed and science. Okay?
I'm keen on this book banning issue. Banning books has to be challenged. Banning teachers is even worse. And over 4,000 books were targeted for banning. And I think mainly, of course, you can assume it's Texas and Florida. I don't know where it is now in Montana, where the issues are. I do remember writing in law school an issue about why Ulysses was banned by James Joyce. So each generation has its books which are banned or try to be banned. And that has to be carefully looked at. That's why I think as an academic whose whole career is in teaching English, I can read a book. And as a lawyer, I can read a case. And I, of course, it would be one vote out of eight. And I could be overvoted and so forth. But I'm keen on this issue not to ban books. First of all, it would just celebrate the book and everybody would go out and read it, you see. And Online, as you know, online is a nightmare.
Who's next?
Go ahead, Gary.
Thanks. We've dealt with book bans at our board. In our district, parents and students have the option to not read any book in our district. If they don't want to read it, they don't have to read it. They'll be provided another book. But when you look at science and sex ed, so my career in physical therapy dealt a lot with science and physiology, biology, and all those type of things. And those, so that's an important element, I think, for all of our students to understand and to know. It doesn't have to be dramatic or anything, but it's a fact. And it's, there may be some books that teachers review and they decide that doesn't fit in our curriculum. But the books in our district are well reviewed by multiple teachers and administrators to determine if it fits into our curriculum as it should. So.
Okay. Diana?
Yeah, I want to piggyback off of what Gary is saying, that we've, at the board, we've had people challenge books. What I've learned from that is I really trust the process that we go through curriculum review. And the thing is that teachers have a curriculum and standards, and they are the ones choosing that material that they find is appropriate for what students need to learn. I really trust that process. We hire educators to make those professional decisions, and I really trust the process for them to do that. And if there is a conflict, there is a way to bring that to the forefront. And any parent has a right to advocate for their kids to not read a book. So nobody is being forced to read. You know, parents have the right to make that decision for their kids. So one, I trust teachers and the process in our district to make those decisions of what's being offered to our kids and to teach it in a way that's, you know, sensitive for those topics in science and sex ed.
Thank you. Who's next?
I'll go.
So I joined the board in December, and I think 2 weeks after I joined the board, I got a phone call that said, they said, I'm dropping a book off on your front porch for you to read. I was like, we have book club on the board? And I was like, okay. Not realizing that it was a book that was trying to get banned. And over my Christmas break, I read the policies and I read the procedures, and it is a fantastic process that the district goes through that they look at before they decide on whether or not to ban a book. And I'll be honest, I have a 10th grade son, and I showed him the book. And I said, did you read this book last year? And he said, Mom, I quoted that book in my final paper so many times because I could relate to a lot of things. And he is not a strong reader, but it was a good, easy read for him. And I think we have to trust the educators in the building, and they know what's right or wrong, and they will figure out how to teach the subjects.
Next, Sandy.
I agree with everything that's been said. We have a great policy and procedure in place for parents to bring forth a book or content that they don't want their child to engage in. But it's important to consider that decision is made for that child and not for the rest of the kids or the rest of the families in the district. The other thing I wanted to add that the district does is anytime there's new curriculum material, and I believe there's some on tables in the Wilson right now, where they invite the public to come in and look at new curriculum material that's being brought forth and ask for feedback on that. So there is the opportunity for parents and community members to come in and review these materials as they're being considered. I think that's really important.
Okay. Carly?
I agree with what everyone's stated before. I believe banning books is not something that should be applied to every single student. Every student has their own personal choice whether or not to read the book if it contradicts with their own views. However, I think the option should be there to diversify their views and their education through multiple reading materials, and that should not be censored or banned, especially when it comes to topics like sex ed and science, especially because, like, in my high school career, I have not been taught a comprehensive sex education, and that's something that you can be taught from books, so censoring and banning those kinds of materials only further, like, disparages your own education.
Okay. And Josh?
With a background in cell biology and neuroscience with an emphasis in biomedical, which is essentially what you do to go to medical school, which I was planning on doing, following the footsteps of many of my family members. In the context of science, which I think is very, very important, right now we spend the second most of any developed country in the world, yet we're ranked 30th in science. Mm-hmm. And we're never going to get further society unless we can get those science and math scores up. I think teaching sex ed and science is extremely important. As far as other books go, however, though, I would say that I think fostering collaboration and letting parents be involved is a their right to be involved. But as far it's kind of hard to ban certain things when you're trying to teach sex ed, but I think the parents have to have a say. Because there's thousands of books in every subject, and if there's one particular book that's really bothering parents, I guess I don't understand why we can't just pick another book. Thank you.
Okay. Back here.
My question is mostly addressed to Mr. Sadai. Did I pronounce this correctly?
Sadai.
Sadai. I apologize.
That's okay. It's a tough one.
But I would like to hear from everyone. You talk about, you've mentioned the word accountability almost every time you stood up. I'd like to understand better what you mean by accountability for teachers. What does that mean?
Okay.
Could you elaborate on that, please?
What is accountability for teachers? And particularly, she's asked Josh.
I think accountability for teachers can mean a lot of different things. I think accountability, as we mentioned, right now our reading scores have dropped, our maths and the rest of our scores have plateaued, and so we need to go through and reassess teacher by teacher what their teaching style, who is mentoring these teachers, and we need as a district to then go and because that's unacceptable that our scores are plateauing and dropping when... I mean, most of our proficiency and above levels, even in Gallatin County, hover around 40%. And so I think that we've got to hold our teachers accountable. We need to support our teachers, but we need to hold them accountable for obviously what's going on here. And I know they're stretched thin, but, we need to be there to help them succeed, and accountability is a way we can do that.
Others of you like to speak to this question? Sure. Sandy?
We know that there is an achievement gap in our schools. Our current superintendent has opened that up and let us know what it is, and has brought several different initiatives into our district to help with that, particularly in reading. We are now going to have a four-year-old early literacy program in Bozeman starting, identifying kids and addressing those needs, those pre-literacy needs in kids. We are also, all our teachers are trained in the science of reading, which is a new approach to teaching reading, and it's research-based. And all of these things are going to help our teachers be better trained and have and increase access to the things that all kids need, because we take all kids.
Yeah, Gary.
Yeah, thanks. This is one of those internal and external issues. So internally, we have great teachers in our district that are working their tail off every day to teach our students. One of the main problems is their workload. What's been placed on their plate every day, the increase in behavioral issues that have emerged significantly in the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years, change in curriculum, the workload that is put on teachers, and they're in the same amount of time. So our system of education continues to exist in the same system that many of you went through years ago. And the need for our students is changing significantly, and we need to address that. So holding teachers accountable, they need to have the right environment to really teach. Like they should be able to teach, our administrators need to be in the same boat.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah.
So to add on to different things that have been said here as far as teacher accountability, it's really complex how we measure student success. And certainly our teachers are a huge factor on helping our students to achieve. And there are many other, you know, external factors that go into when we say a student is proficient and what proficiency actually means. So one of the areas that I see the district addressing that is the build of professional learning communities. And this whole year we've been listening to each school talk about their professional learning community plan. And what's really exciting is those pieces are happening right now, and they continue to need our support. Teachers get together in teams. They review the data of their students. They target and look at, like, where are the things that we need to address, and how can we pool our resources and address the things that need to be so all of our students can succeed. So I see our district making strides towards that, and that's where our teachers need our support for that accountability piece.
Let me just add a quick note of discord. The quality of education is what I spoke about earlier, which is related to the quality of the educator, the teacher. I did not find the quality of the teachers acceptable when I was substitute teaching. That's why it's helpful to be in the trenches and see what's going on in the classroom. I was struck from the roles of substitute teacher because of three things. I said that etymology to the students, may I please add this to the regular teacher, is important in definition of words. I added to the letter that King wrote from the Birmingham jail. I knew the person who wrote the letter, the bishop I knew. This is civil rights. I wrote a book about blacks. It's banned in Charleston. And I talked about the Revolutionary War being important in the history lesson. For those three things, and I refused to serve as a secretary. I'm a teacher. And I was fired. I think the quality of teaching is not good enough.
Are you passing, or do you want to speak to that? Accountability teachers.
I could speak on it.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, with my personal experience with my own teachers in my 4 years in Bozeman High, I've seen them do an excellent job as educators navigating state legislation that's trying to constantly change what education looks like in our state, while also trying to please multiple stakeholders in this town. And I think they're doing a great job with the resources that they're given. I don't necessarily think that it's responsibility that teachers aren't taking, that our achievement gap is the reason why it is. I think it's that our schools aren't giving enough resources and time to our teachers themselves, and they need more of that to be able to expand for their students, because they are just humans. They're teachers, and they're paid just like everyone else has for their job. And just like us and everyone else, they should be given the resources to grow.
I'm going to tag off of what Liana said. So 3 weeks ago, I did wake up in the middle of the night and I said, how are these teachers being held accountable for these PLCs? And the very next day, we had a luncheon at Emily Dickinson, and my answer was given to me. Those teachers, the fifth grade teachers, get together twice a week and discuss how they are going to help each student. And then their principal holds them accountable. And then we saw the same thing at Meadowlark. So I do think they are being held accountable. Is there progress to be made? Of course. There's always progress to be made. But they are being held accountable, and they care about these kids.
Way over here, the gentleman.
Yes. I'm just way over here. My question actually tees off of what you already talked about. I've been in this town for 30 years. For 30 years, the amount of money the state has given to education has gone like this. Mm-hmm. We've supported Bozeman and its bond issuances.
What is your question, sir? Your question?
Oh, we talked about money. How are you going to get more money? Everybody says we need more. How would you get more?
Okay, thank you. That's great. Who wants to start? Gary?
Good question.
Yeah.
That's one of those external issues. We're only given the money the legislature decides they're going to give us. The legislative intercommittees are meeting now, and there's actually a pretty good group that's really trying to address issues in education. but in my personal view, it's not sufficient enough. They're not hearing from the right people. We need to hear from teachers, administrators, parents, and students in our schools to know what they need, and here's how we need to fund it. And the legislature needs to listen to that. That's one of our external challenges. There's very little we can do as a district to really change the funding formula. We're only given so much money. If I gave you $10 and say, that's all you get, you go buy, do whatever you want to with it, that's it. So we're very fortunate in this community, by the way, and I thank everybody here. We have a very supportive community. And that's somewhat unusual around the state. So it's our community is helping us reach our max and fund our resources as much as we can. Thank you.
Leanne?
Thank you for that question, and I want to reiterate what Gary said, that we are fortunate in this community that Bozeman has supported all the levies for our schools. And what I do want to say is that what Gary talked about, he's mentored me. He's held that position as municipal director and has mentored me to be in that position to hopefully be part of that conversation in Helena to work with the legislature and thinking about how we can change that funding formula and hopefully make those kinds of adjustments to how our schools are funded. It's a huge issue. We have an opportunity to lead in the state, like I'd said before. So that's one of the reasons why I'm excited to hopefully continue this work and elevate that voice. Gary's been phenomenal in laying the groundwork and establishing those kinds of relationships. And so we're special in Bozeman, I think, to be able to have those connections and hopefully have that kind of influence.
Anybody else want to speak to that?
I'll speak to it.
Sure.
And again, yeah, thank you for the question, because I think this is going to be an issue for every school board forever. There's never going to be enough money. The state hasn't lived up to fully the number that they're supposed to be giving to all the districts. And so I think that we need to diligently look at accountability as far as administrative costs. We need to make sure that absolutely everything that we can't shave is being shaved, because the teachers, we need to be holding these teachers because they're essential to our children's life, essentially. And I also think that as an entrepreneur, we can kind of step back and think outside the box, because I know there's a lot of other ways that we can get money coming into the school system other than from squeezing your taxes harder every year.
Robert?
Yeah, this is on the money. Well, briefly, always discord here. It's in Helena. It's not our issue, as Gary was saying. It struck me as possibly that the trustees could lobby, if state allows, lobby this crowd up in Helena. As far as the science that Josh was talking about, we've got a governor who doesn't believe in evolution, so we're not in good shape here. And he controls everything, and so forth and so on, and we're in bad shape.
Who else would like to speak to this question? Are we done? Okay.
Yes, sir, right there.
I think it's given that both our student population and our faculty is very diverse in their backgrounds and values and everything. How do we firewall so that students aren't being in a classroom are being educated on facts and not being given indoctrinated in values that may contradict what their families have?
Did everybody hear the question? Yeah. Okay. Who would like to answer that one?
I'll go ahead.
Leanne?
Okay. I'm going to bring my teacher voice into this. Or, you know, my perspective. And because as a board, as a person on the board, I'm governing, right? So I'm not micromanaging in the classrooms and those kinds of things. But again and again, what I really have come to believe and seen is that I trust teachers to make really good decisions in the classroom. I mean, we just heard from one of our high school students, and I know from the experience of my own kids. And I'm not saying every teacher is perfect, but I really believe that I and trust in our teachers and how they're delivering curriculum and how they're handling those issues. I taught eighth grade. There's a lot that happens in eighth grade, and fielding and understanding that, I don't think I've met a teacher who doesn't care about how they communicate those ideas and how they foster discussion in their classroom. I also have really seen how teachers welcome parents and that dialogue and what their concerns are and having those conversations. I don't think there's a teacher that I've met who doesn't, if parents have concerns, to bring them forward and work with the teacher on whatever those topics might be. So bottom line, I trust the professionals in our classroom to make those decisions.
Robert?
I have a quotation that's right up my interest alley. Values are important. Here's a quotation from the president of the National Association of Secondary School Principals, dated 1952, president of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. Students must have something to believe, not only to believe, but to believe in. So teachers are examples. We teach values, virtue, manners maketh man. That's important. And that's what I mean about the quality and the value of the teachers themselves. It's not only is the quality of the educator in the classroom remains the number one factor contributing to student success. Casey Bertram in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle on March the 23rd. By the way, that national president was my father, Ray Black, who was one of the first EDDs in America. From Harvard in Alabama and Chicago.
Who else would like to speak to
I'll
this?
Speak.
Yeah, Sandy?
Well, I'll probably wear my teacher hat too. I taught middle school, mainly middle school, for the majority of my career. And I have been to a lot of luncheons in the Bozeman School District this year. We go to all the schools and they present data and we meet teachers and we visit classrooms. And I spent 33 of my years in a classroom working with kids. And I would encourage people, because I too trust teachers. I have never worked with or met a teacher that was anything other than caring so much and so deeply about the kids. And if parents are engaged in their kids' educational process, they can go and talk. I would encourage them to go and talk to their teachers if they have a specific concern, because we are human and we make mistakes, and I've told on myself many times actually, teaching is a labor of love. It is. It's something that you do because you love going to work every day and you love working with kids. I'll stop right there.
You know, I think this is where refocusing and implementing evidence-based basic curriculums that focus on core learning, because that is the most important thing that we're lacking right now. I just read a study by a guy at Hoover Institute at Stanford that said if we could get our students proficient at math and science as the rest of the world leaders are, that our GDP would probably grow an additional 4.5% over the next 20 years. And we need to get back to focusing on that. And I think this is where students are being distracted and they're spending time focusing on things other than the core curriculum. And so that's how we would do that, implement policies that advocate for refocusing on core subjects.
Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. I support parent choice in making decisions on what to do, particularly regarding values that they may have. We all have different values. And that's what teachers have to deal with every day, with students and their parents in the classroom that may have different values. So I think, like Sandy said, communicating with the teacher, I think, would be beneficial. And to at least talk to them about that and understand that. But that's one of the workload issues that's facing our teachers today with things like that. So I think it's one of those issues that needs to be discussed and resolved as best as possible, but still focus on the content of the curriculum and how it's taught and make sure those students do that. And the most critical piece to me is those students need to learn how to be critical thinkers. So getting different values and different contexts of information. So thank you.
Carly or Melissa?
I'm good.
I'll go.
Okay.
I feel like when it comes to teaching subjects, obviously you do need to teach core theory and core subjects, but also the expansion upon that in the arts and humanities is something that's really built up students to see what they like in this world and also to develop their own critical thinking. And also when you approach more controversial questions and topics within classrooms, I think one of the most like comprehensive and thought-provoking ways my teachers have gone about it is presenting all sides of the argument and really making sure students understand what every single perspective is, because it makes you think about your own more deeply and really evaluate why you think what you think. And it becomes a lot much more than like an assignment. And it's not just coercion. It forms like a person to really critically think about who they are and what their values are.
Right there and then over there, okay? And then over here.
This is for the educators. I think Gary's one, and Cassandra might be the other one right now. Who determines the curriculum for each grade, and who determines what the textbooks are going to be? Is that a board issue, or is that a issue that's delegated somewhere else?
Who? He's asking who decides about the curriculum and what the teachers teach. Is that correct?
And the textbooks.
And the textbooks, I'm sorry. Yeah, Leanna, go for it.
I'll go first because I work in curriculum and math education curriculum around the country. So the process of curriculum is a committee gets together in the district, involves many stakeholders, and first year is we research what the standards are and what research says about that particular curriculum area. So there's like a year of research. And once that's been vetted, then committees are formed that they try to find what curriculum is going to match what the standards say that need to be taught and what best research practices are. That's the second year. It's the third year that they start to vet, you know, and choose some curriculums. So the district committees might have like three curriculums in any subject area that they say, here are ones that meet research and are the best practices. And then teachers pilot those to see how they work out. And so it's a whole very step-by-step kind of process, and people have input all along the way. And it takes a while before one is decided on. And once it's decided, how it's implemented also takes a lot of time. We get professional development people to come in and do that. And okay. It's a long, involved process.
Who else wants to speak to this? Gary?
Yeah, thank you. Just to add on to what Leanna said, the last 4 years, I've been on an OPI negotiated rulemaking committee for educator prep program standards, and I served on the OPI Quality Schools Task Force for Chapter 55, which is the K-12 accreditation standards. So those standards dictate what every district in the state has to comply with, and those standards can change. And then the districts, as Leanna said, have to look at what curriculums can we apply that match those standards. So there's several different layers of how curriculum is chosen, but ultimately we have to meet the standards that are set by OPI.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak to this?
They don't know what OPI is.
Sorry. Office of Public Instruction. Sorry. Thank you.
I might add that I believe the Office of Public Instruction has a cycle of curriculum materials, the review process that schools need to meet. So we're also on a cycle of review and adoption. That's dictated through the Office of Public Instruction. Sorry about the acronyms. We're full of them.
Anybody else? What?
We never had a chance to hear how textbooks are selected.
Okay.
That was part of the question.
Yeah, part of the question was, how did textbooks get selected? Okay,
let me add to that. My understanding is that the publishers are calling the shots, and they look at the states that are most populated with students. So, in effect, publishers are giving us those textbooks which Texas wants. So it's a Hobson's choice. You take this one or you don't take any at all kind of thing. I could be dead wrong on that, but that's the way I've always understood it, that we really don't have much of a choice according to the publishers.
And I would just add on to that. A few weeks ago, I happened to have lunch with the Montana State Attorney General, and he informed me, and I had a question about textbooks, and there was some textbook issues in Clancy, and the state has actually put some laws down as far as what can and can't go in schools, but then ultimately where the issue was in Clancy was it was the superintendent signed off on it, but it was the librarian's list. He just didn't really look at the list. Apparently there were some issues with some of those books. So,
Gary?
Yeah. In our district, there's a committee is put together, a large committee, that reviews the textbooks that are going to be used in classrooms at all grade levels. So they're reviewed very closely by a group of people, and they decide what fits their ability to meet the accreditation standards. So I think it's a very good process of really reviewing those books to decide which ones best can meet the needs of the students to achieve the accreditation standards.
Okay. Want to speak to
Sandy? Could I just add on?
I think sure. Tack on.
I've been on a couple of curriculum in a smaller rural district, but part of the process is that you are given standards and then you are given best practices. What are the best practices in teaching different content material? And so the professionals look for that in textbooks. And there's a wide variety of textbooks. And yes, sometimes they come out of larger states that have the textbook companies are gearing towards that. But we as professionals are sitting down and looking at the textbooks, matching them with standards and best practices to see what fits for us.
All right. Over there.
My question was for the incumbents running again this year. Uh-huh. A majority of you opened with comments about the budget and also comments about teacher retention. What are some specific things that you've done on the board in your past term that have made those two issues better?
And the two issues are teacher retention
and the budget.
And the budget. Okay, those of you who've been on the board before, would be you, Gary.
Gary, and you've been on the longest.
You and you.
We handle our finances in this district extremely well. 90% of our funds go to salaries and benefits for teachers. And in the last several years, to deal with funding issues, a couple things I've done is lead resolutions and legislation to create the multi-district cooperative, which allows districts to transfer funds between elementary and high school districts or surrounding districts. And then the safety levy, which has been very valuable to us in the last year. Thank you to the voters for passing our safety levy, which takes funds out of our general fund budget and allows that to grow. So there are a lot of things we can do within the district to deal with our budget, but it's very limited. That's where it goes to the external stakeholders in education, which is legislators and other entities in the state that we have to deal with.
Okay. Sandy?
One of the other things that we've been looking at doing is, and they're looking at doing this in several of the schools around the state, is growing your own educators. Looking at our young people in high school and having them identify perhaps by teachers or parents or themselves as potential teachers and helping and the school district potentially, this is at the talking phase and the potential planning phase, but looking at that as a resource for us because frankly, we've gone from 100 for one job to 10 for one job. And I believe I've had a lot of student teachers throughout my career, and we have excellent teachers coming out of Montana State and who are here and who want to stay here. And so we're looking at ways where we can support and grow our own educators within our district, as it makes it harder for other people to move into our district.
Anybody else want to speak?
Yeah.
Leanna?
So in addition to what Gary and Sandy said, one of the things I don't take for granted is that our voters have always approved our levies, and that's simply so that we can maximize what our limit is in the budget to fund our schools to the fullest amount that we can. And part of that is a trustee. In the spring, we go to over 50 public meetings and just educate the public on what those levies are about and what's coming up in the elections. And so we attend those. So in the spring, we're going everywhere from Sunrise Rotary to the League of Women Voters to retired people. So we take turns. So I'm sitting in on those educational meetings. I've learned a lot from sitting at those because it's Casey and Mike Waterman, our district, who present. But making sure our voters are informed so that we can pass the levies to the maximum budget that we're allowed by the state.
Anybody else want to speak to it? Okay. Who else? You had a question, sir.
Well, my question is probably directed primarily to Sandy because she has the outlying schools, Montfortin, Anderson, and perhaps Churchill.
Montfortin, Anderson, Gallatin, Gateway, Cottonwood, Lamont.
We have a family. My sister-in-law moved here from Washington, and she is a substitute teacher, and she is begged, literally, to come and substitute teach in these places because they are so short on teachers. Mm-hmm. And she can, you know, she might as well have a full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I'm passing that on. Some people talked about that. What are we doing about staffing educators? Mm-hmm.
Well, I know for substitute teachers in the rural schools, you have to go through the county superintendent, and you have to sign up with them, and then have a background check, and everything is done, and then you commit to what one or all of the rural schools. So I know that's how the substitute teaching is going. And also you can go through that office to look for openings in rural schools and through OPI. So I hope I'm answering your question.
Well, I'm just passing information along because you're going to be having this job.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. The woman in the pink behind.
Hi there. I just want to shift the conversation a little bit to safety and fairness. And as you know, Title IX has been one of the most important instruments to advance safety and fairness, particularly to outlaw sex discrimination in education. The question is, do you support the brand new regulations that have updated Title IX that came out last week? And if so, how will you lead to make sure our district robustly implements Title IX under the new regulations?
Thank you for the question. It was about Title IX. So what happens when there's new federal policies? Those policies trickle down and to how they affect our policies, and we're updated on those. Those are something that our board sees how, if there's any discrepancies and if we need to change anything, but it's about applying those policies in that way. And that's what we're about as a board, is we vote and we support those policies. So I've read those updated policies, and there's, some slight changes, and, as things might come up that challenge those things, that will be up for discussion. But it's part of our work on the board is to...
Are we talking about the physical male being allowed to participate in female sports? Is that what we're talking about?
No, we're talking about just some of the changes to the Title IX policy, specifically what protections there are for sex discrimination. And that's something that's been a part of our policies always, and there's just some wording that has changed. So that's what we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, they skipped that. They skipped that issue. They're not addressing that in these Biden rollback from Trump dictates in Title IX. Title IX is dear to my heart in the central case getting women in a men's public college. I talked to a lot of people in D.C. who wrote the Title IX, and it's crucial in education. But they did skip that issue, the crux of a woman, or formerly a woman, formerly a man, competing in women's athletics. And so what really now is the issue that can be implemented, as I understand it, is that a allegation of sex discrimination is easier to prove under these Biden regulations. It used to be impossible. The burden was entirely on the young woman who had been sexually molested or whatever. And so that's really the key, I think, to what Biden has done in this rollback.
I had hoped that everybody would respond whether they supported the new proposed regulations.
So your question is, do they support the new regulations?
I support it.
Okay. Anybody else? Gary?
In full transparency, I haven't read those yet, but I would make a decision after I read them.
I'll have to agree with Gary. I have not...
And I would echo that. It has not come before us yet. And so I will plan on going home and reading it.
Harley, do you want to say anything about that?
I also have not read the new Title IX changes.
Agreed. I have not, but I have always been an advocate for inclusivity and equality.
What does that mean? Can you explain that?
Okay. Hang on a second. You get one... If you want to ask a question...
I'm sorry, but...
I know. I understand. But... This is how we run these, and I got to be fair. So, who else has a question? Okay, way in the back. Okay, you.
One thing that the district did to address budget concerns was move to a block schedule, which will start in the high school next year. I'm wondering what the board thinks the impact of that might be, given there's an hour less direct instruction per subject per week. Particularly, I'm concerned about AP classes. And if you can focus on any positives of the block schedule, that would be great.
She's asking about block schedules, which the high school, I think, is implementing this year. Or is it...
Next year.
I'm sorry. Is it in the middle school as well?
Yes,
or not?
This is the first year in the middle school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Sandy.
I served on the Guiding Coalition for the high schools as the board liaison this year. And there are going to be bumps in the road. There are issues with block scheduling, but one of the things that I see as a big plus is as we move to professional learning communities and as we move towards making more things accessible for all kids, there's going to be time set aside during the day for professional learning communities to meet about kids and to offer enrichment or special needs or whatever that is needed during that time instead of doing it during lunch or after school or whatever. So that is a huge plus with me as I look at that. Now, there are concerns. We're hearing it from kids about long periods of time and all of that. And we're going to navigate that next year.
Go ahead, Melissa.
I do think that I have a current eighth grader at SMS, and he is on the block schedule. And I do think the high school will probably have some hiccups next year. And I'll be completely honest. When I first heard about the block schedule, I was like, an hour and a half in a classroom. That's a long time frame. And then I talked to other people in the district, and they were like, this is what we did in my high school. And I absolutely loved it because they felt like it prepared them for college. I think the one thing for kids to understand is there is a intervention period set up on the schedule on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And I think once kids realize the intervention period is for them and for their benefit and learn how to use it and talk to their teachers, they will realize how fantastic the intervention period is.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Block scheduling happened as a way to address a budget shortfall, and that was done through a wide variety of stakeholders to make that decision. And change is really hard, as people have said. Just the other day, we heard from middle school students and teachers who have been going through this process, and they shared what was bumpy and what was hard. But at this point in the year, they came away with some really great things that the teachers are able to innovate in a different way in that 90-minute block schedule. And even those students were like, oh, we don't like this. What they did say is they appreciated going deeply into subjects
subjects, mm-hmm. and having the chance and opportunity to work more individually with their teachers on things like makeup tests and so forth. So I see some positives coming. It's going to be a year of learning and growing for sure.
Mm-hmm. I understood your question to address AP courses as well. Did you not?
Yes.
And when I was substitute teaching, and this was team teaching with history and English, and I've read in the paper there's some friction between those two disciplines and the teachers who teach each one. But let me say real quickly that one of the best teachers I ever heard and saw and witnessed was at Bozeman High School, AP Economics. He was magnificent. It is Stafford. I've forgotten his name.
Stoddard.
What is it?
Stoddard.
And I've had great teachers at the great universities. And so Bozeman should be very proud to have that kind of person doing AP. And we would hope that block or team teaching would not disrupt his expertise.
Anybody else want to speak to that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say I haven't read the research one way or another, but I know that I have gotten feedback that some teachers are concerned that, you know, children, it's good for them when they're in the middle of learning to kind of stand up, reset, and then refocus. And so I definitely would say there's some concerns as far as children getting lost in these long blocks when they kind of need to get up and move around and, okay, now let's focus and refocus. And it's concerning of me, but I haven't read the studies either way. But
Gary?
Yeah, there's research out there that demonstrates that the block schedule can be very productive. And change is difficult, but we're at a time in education where we need to make some changes. And this is one of them. The change in our district came from our budget. So it helped our budget, and as Liana said, the teachers work together. One thing I like about our district is we get the groups together to solve some of these problems, and I think we need to give it some time. I think it's too early to make a judgment about the block schedule. I think students need to experience it, teachers need to live in that, and the district is dynamic in how it's addressing that. They're constantly evaluating that and making changes along the way as they need to make sure it works. But we're hearing mainly good comments from teachers and students about the block schedule, and as they go through the year, it's becoming pretty productive.
Do you want to say anything about that, Carly?
I'd have to agree with Gary. I think it's too early to make any judgments about whether it is productive. I think there has been like a lot of apprehension coming from students about longer periods of time in classrooms, especially if you don't like that class. However, I think I personally really trust our educators to make the most out of that time and make it productive for our students, as well as making it engaging for them as well. And I think it's just a learning curve that our students are going to have to go over, and our educators as well.
Tell you what, we're going to do one more question, and then we'll do the wrap-up. How's that sound?
Perfect.
Yes, sir.
So given the 90% uptake in multilingual students, particularly Spanish-speaking, if you all are elected, kind of what would you do or not do, I guess, to address this community and their needs?
What do you do to address students who don't speak English?
Multilingual, yeah.
Basically. Okay. Yes, Sandy?
Well, right now, as we are working really hard in our district to do that very thing, I feel like my role is to support them in doing that, support them in allocating resources that they need to do that, teachers that they need to have to allow our kids to access what they need to access. Summer school, we're offering a summer school this summer with intensive language pieces for our kids. We're committed to doing that. So I feel like my role is to support what we as a district have agreed to do.
Who else wants to speak to that?
I'll take a stab at that one. I would say one thing they're doing right now, which is very disheartening to me, is they're pulling resources from our kids to give to these kids that are having a hard time. And I think we need to think outside the box rather than pulling resources from other classes. We need to maybe have those kids come in before school at 0 hour. Maybe they need to stay late after school when there's going to be teachers there. Maybe they need to come in for the weekend summer school. We need to have online stuff, and then we need to hold those students accountable to make sure that they're putting in their work, because everybody's on a tight budget, and so we just need to do our best with what we have to address that, and I think there are many ways that we can do that.
Gary?
Yeah, that's one of the significant issues within our district now, the growing population of multilingual learners. So that's challenging for the teachers and the students. We've heard from a group of students at one of our elementary schools where they were all Spanish, speaking from South American countries, and they were gathering in groups of their peers, their classmates, and they were helping each other learn each other's language with that. But we have in our district the MTSS, which is multi-tier system of support. So the teachers are focusing on the needs of every student and trying to meet those needs as best they can. There is a resource challenge with that, at needing additional resources to help those students. But our district goal is to address every student in our district. And that's what we're trying to do. We're working our hardest to get that done. There's definitely more that has to be done. But our district, I'm very confident our district is working very hard and well to see that that gets done.
Melissa?
Our population of multilingual students has doubled in the past year. And we do have Highlight Elementary and Meadowlark Elementary, as well as Sacagawea Middle School and Gallatin High School, set aside for multilingual students. And I watched a lesson 2 weeks ago at Meadowlark where four students were brought in to learn symmetry. They weren't taken out of their regular math class. They were taken out to learn symmetry. And they had a para in the classroom as well as a teacher. Our teachers need help. I had a kindergarten teacher tell me yesterday she got two new kids a week ago that do not speak any English, and they're identical twins, so she can't tell them apart. So the district is working hard. We have a Bella program starting this summer at Highlight, and we need to get the teachers the resources because it is only going to grow.
Anybody else want to speak to this? Okay. Each candidate has 2 minutes to wrap up and say whatever they'd like to say. So, who wants to start?
I can start.
Okay. Sandy?
Well, I thank you for your time tonight. And it is my honor to serve this wonderful district that we have for our kids. I can't be prouder of what we're trying to do for all our students. And I'm proud to serve the teachers, the administration, our superintendent, and the things that we need to do to be better. And that's always what it's been about since I've been on the board, is to be better. We have issues, and we're facing them, we're acknowledging them, and we're moving forward. But we have a great team in place, and so with that, I'm running unopposed, so I'm not going to take any more time. During this time, I'm going to let everybody else talk.
Thank you, Sandy. Who wants to be next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
19 years ago, I got married. And about 5 days after I got married, I got an email from my father. And he said, I know you're probably not going to read this because you're smarter than me. So he said on his plane ride home, he kept thinking about every event that happened at the wedding, every person that traveled to our wedding, from the flowers, the photographer, the restaurants that we ate at. And he said when he got home, he created a picture of just dots for everything that he thought about that involved the wedding. And then he connected those dots just like we used to connect the dots as kids. And obviously his didn't have numbers. And his dots created a picture. And he said it wasn't a picture. It wasn't a picture that he could hang on the wall. It wasn't a picture of a giraffe. It was a picture of memories, and it was a picture of people coming together. And I think that's what our school system is. It's a bunch of dots, from our teachers to our principals to our Wilson office, and we have to come together for the kids. I'm an open-minded person, a go-getter. I've supported this community in every which possible way that I can, and I'm eager to learn. I just joined the board in December, and I definitely have seen the deer in headlight looks a lot, but it's been a lot of fun. I feel fortunate to be on the board amongst these other people. They've been very supportive of me, and it has. It's been an honor, and I hope to serve for 3 more years.
So to reiterate a couple of things, I feel really fortunate to be serving in this community. I was a teacher, and now I'm on the board. And the support that we have for our school system is just incredible. And I say that because I work in school districts around the country, so I have a personal sense, professionally and being here, how the leadership, from everything from the leadership to the cohesiveness of the board and how we work, it's a phenomenal place to be, and I don't take this responsibility lightly. I would really love to serve again. It would be my honor. I trust our community, too, that we put the right people in place to serve here, and it's an honor. So, I hope to be here again. And thank you for coming tonight. Like, having the room filled like this just shows how engaged we are as a community. Mm-hmm. This is, like, in the one hand, it's kind of nerve-wracking, but it's also gratifying to see people who are here to support public education. So thank you for coming out.
Who's next? Josh.
Thank you all for coming again. As I mentioned earlier in my opening statement, some of the areas that I promise to do my best to focus on if I'm elected is enhancing student success, fostering collaboration between parents and students, ensuring that there's transparent fiscal responsibility, looking at the budget, looking at programs that maybe had good intentions when they were starting but aren't leading to increased curriculum scores, and a collaborative policy reform that, again, involves teacher and parental input. I believe one of the most important qualities of a board member is to have courage. The courage to do what's best for our children, even in the face of adversity, and to strive to protect that process and to find a path to succeed. And I believe with my business experience, commitment to financial transparency, and my leadership style will make me well suited for the difficult challenges that we have going forward. And although I may not agree with everyone on the board, I promise that I will work my best with everyone on the board, because the board is only good as the members on it, and they need to work together. So even though our views may not be the same, I will respect their views and respectfully try to get them to understand my views. And so thanks for coming. And I would like to conclude with a quote that is often attributed to Thomas Jefferson. A sustainable democracy depends on an educated populace.
Right.
And because of that, we built one of the best public education systems in the world. Public education, secondary public education, and post-secondary public education. And at the end of the day, the future of our children is at stake here. And we cannot forget the importance of this public education, especially in Montana right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll go.
Okay.
I've talked about, this quarter note, the value of education is dependent on the value of the educator and administration. My point has been to improve those two things in Bozeman in order to compete in the global market. I want to close with a metaphor regarding how to achieve our goals. And we do have things in place such as the ABCT, the American Board for Certification of Team Teachers. We have things like that, how to teach teachers to do better and how to teach students to read, in the Amplify program as well. The metaphor is, when I was a first lieutenant about 10 miles from the DMZ in Korea for a year, briefing 1- and 2-star generals as special security group. And the BOQ, people were buying all of these Sony amplifiers and stereos. And nobody knew anything about Mozart or Beethoven or Brahms. They just, all these lieutenants, including myself maybe, were focused on the mechanics. Education is more than all of these mechanics, these feel-good things about how well we're doing. It's about aggression, being passionate, moving in the right direction toward a learned population. We will not have hegemony in the world if we don't do a good job in education. That's the end of it, and you know that, and we all know that. And we can do better in Bozeman. And that's my, that would be what I would be up to if I served. Thank you.
Who's next? Carly? Okay.
I would also like to thank everyone for coming out tonight. Like, seeing the room basically packed is again, kind of nerve-wracking, but also really symbolic of how great the support for our public education here is in Bozeman. And on that note, I don't think, well, I know I wouldn't be the person I am here today without this school system, and I wouldn't have the opportunities and the privilege that I have right now without the Bozeman schools. And I want to continue those things and make sure that all students in the future have the same opportunities and privileges that I have today going on. I think, again, one of the most important things in the governing body is to have representation, especially when it comes to school boards. Having students with an active vote and voice within the reasoning and the board is an important thing, especially as we're the stakeholders and we're the people the decisions are affecting. This has been a really great experience running, and I really hope I'm really thankful for being able to, and I'm really thankful. Thank you.
And Gary, you get the last word.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight too and paying attention to this important thing. There's a quote that I heard years ago that I try to adhere to, and that is, the best way to predict the future is to help create it. And that's my mission on the board. It's not a personal agenda item, but the questions we've heard tonight are, what are you doing to solve these issues? That's the question I'm trying to get answered. So I've started this process. This amount of time is not enough for me to explain the whole thing. But I'm trying to get all educational stakeholders in the state, from the governor's office on down. I shouldn't say on down, because the key elements I'm trying to do is get the voice of students, teachers, administrators, and parents in the room to the higher level stakeholders. And so far, that's going pretty well, and I would like to continue that. And it would be very helpful if I'm able to stay on the board to get that done. But if we can get that done, then a lot of the questions you have will at least have a process to begin to answer those questions. We can't do anything quickly in education. It takes strategic planning and process, but we have to have the right discussions among the key stakeholders, which are teachers, administrators, parents, and students. And that's what I'm trying to do, is switch this from top down to grassroots and inform everybody in a well-facilitated consensus process. So everybody gets to talk, everybody has to listen to each other's points of view, and come together in good consensus on good recommendations and solutions to a lot of topics we've talked about tonight, plus many more. So I would appreciate serving another term.
And I want to thank the candidates for running. Without them, we're lost. And I also want to thank all of you for coming out. What a vibrant community we have. It's really quite wonderful. I moved here 22 years ago, and you couldn't pry me out of here. And part of the reason is that we have such an engaged community. So I thank you all for coming, and thank you for your questions, and thank you, candidates, especially. Thank you.
That was the forum for candidates for the open seats on the Bozeman School Board. Again, that was held at the Bozeman Public Library on the 24th of April, 2024. The recording of this forum and other forums is available on the kgvm.org website.